All right, and we are back at the third degree, and we're giving November Juliet Goldston. Those are just NJ Goldston.
Yeah.
The third degree.
Yes.
And she is out of control, successful, phenomenal example of a woman who blends femininity, business acumen, style sense. I could go on. And sense of humor.
Oh, thank you.
Which are all keys to how you're helping everybody that works with you get better. It's important to you to help the people around you get better.
I think so. I think it's important to work in teams. And I've always loved working with strong teams. And I think when we all work together, we're all benefiting and helping each other. And I love learning from other people. I hope people will feel the same way towards me. And again, I think it goes back to working problems, working issues, developing things together.
How'd you learn that teams were important?
That's a great question. I don't think I knew that early on in my career. I think that's something that, again, because I worked at a large corporation early in my career, that I really loved my corporate life, that I began to observe that when the departments work together and different departments and different divisions work together, then the whole company was more successful. Of course, then we all got paid more. We all got bonuses. And we all did better if we worked and helped each other. But that took a while, as opposed to necessarily constantly worrying about, you know, yourself or how you were doing. It was better to participate. And I think also it was learning that your colleagues and your peers are great supporters. And if you support them, they're going to support you, and together you're going to do better.
And that's been a hard lesson for me. I mean, that's a hard lesson for anybody. And if you haven't picked it up someplace else, I listened to a male executive giving a pep talk to his people 6, 7, 8 months ago, and his characterization, I always thought, where is this guy coming from? And I talked to him a little bit, and it turned out he'd been competitively, his sport was judo.
Oh, wow.
But that's an individual sport. Like, you talk to somebody who played a team sport, they understand teams.
Right.
Somewhere along the line, you understand teams, but if you know, this guy was in judo, that's not a team. You succeed all by yourself.
Right.
And that was that came very much across in his guidance to his team. He just didn't understand why they didn't work harder.
Well, in my career, one of the companies I worked at, they had a lot of corporate training. And one of these exercises they did, which was, I think, an eye-opener for me, and they had different groups, and they put them into different pods, and then they pretended and gave them an assignment in the room where everyone like crash landed on an island. You know, this exercise,
survivor.
The survivor thing.
All right.
And that if the team didn't work together, a lot of the people at that point thought that even if they were alone, to your point, they were going to survive. But by the end of the exercise, everyone realized that without each other, they weren't going to survive. So that was sort of one of the first eye-opening things. That were doing these training exercises within a large corporate environment with your peers began to open my eyes to.
Can you name the company?
Sure. I had a great experience in American Express.
American Express. Yeah, yeah. I think that's very important. If that's a practice of teaching people team, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still doing it today, but I had a lot of great corporate training there, and I really took it to heart, and it was really wonderful for me. And I think I often refer back in my mind to things that I learned there and said, you know, how am I going to carry that forward in my career for myself and with whatever I'm doing?
So you are an American Express Wall Streeter to Beverly Hills fashion leader, inaugural edition Angelino magazine. That is a long way.
It's a long way, but you know, I when I came out here, I first went to work at MGM and Universal Studios and loved my careers there.
Doing
I was in licensing and merchandising in the different two different groups, marketing, advertising, and it was really a great time in my life working either on tentpole or Oscar-winning pictures and developing marketing plans and licensing and merchandising and consumer goods.
So you've been successfully navigating the environment in Los Angeles for some time.
I have.
What is important here?
I think one of the interesting things is when I first came to Los Angeles, I thought it was going to be more easygoing than it is. And it's really, you know, a hard driving environment and with a lot of really incredibly talented people, just like they are in New York City. So I really love being with lots of really smart, interesting individuals. Run the question by me again.
Well, I lost my way. This is kind of the entertainment and fashion hubs of the planet. And you're a very successful New York City woman and a very successful Los Angeles woman. So there's some keys to success. The Elon Musk sort of principle. I remember reading Elon Musk used to read two completely different books at the same time looking for universal principles. And you've discovered universal principles at work in New York and both in Los Angeles, two very different places. And some of that is to work hard.
Right. I mean, working hard gets you a long way and in a lot of places. And it's just doing the work and being committed. But you have to enjoy it. I think that's the other thing. When you enjoy what you're doing, then you feel passionate about it and hopefully you get better at it. And you keep wanting, I hope, to educate yourself. And I'm always trying to continue my education in some way, but follow passions that I love. I mean, I've always loved fashion. And so my blog was a natural extension of my passion. And then it opened up other doors for me in life just by me following a passion. I think that's what can happen for a lot of people. They have to follow their passion, but they also have to be willing to do the junior work. I mean, one of my first jobs, instead of being a gopher, I called myself a gopherette because I was a girl.
All right. So there's a tough thing. You were willing to start at the bottom of the rung.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not everybody wants to do that.
But, you know, you learn so much at the bottom because you're actually doing certain types of tasks and you remember how to do them and they're building blocks for lots of other things. I worked on a project probably a year ago and I had to learn something new and it was very technical. And when I started to tackle it, I was like, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do this technical software project. And I was like, I made up my mind. I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to keep working on this until I do it. And it might not take 2 weeks. It might take 8 weeks, might take 10 weeks, but I'm going to teach myself how to do this because I'm going to be better for this. And I'm going to have a greater understanding of what's happening in the software and the technical world because of it. And that's so important right now because we're in such a, you know, technology is driving so many things.
So you felt like the act of learning to do it and going through it was actually making you better. You were getting your own sort of intrinsic compensation just by going through it.
Absolutely. And then if I was working on a project or someone else was working on it, I could understand what they were doing because I had done it. And I think that's one of the things that's important wherever you are in your career, wherever you're working. Sometimes it's really important to learn some of those basics. And Sheryl Sandberg talked about that in her book about how sometimes you don't know how to do something. And if you want that seat at the table, then you know what? You start to teach yourself. It doesn't mean that you can't learn it.
If you want the seat at the table,
yeah.
What happens if people won't let you sit at the table?
Well, that, she wrote a whole book on that. I don't even know if I can go into all that.
Well, it didn't sound to me like you asked for anybody's permission. It sounded to me like you worked at it. And, you know, the issue is who needs to give you permission?
I think it might go back to one of your points earlier is you have to build up the confidence and your skills to hopefully raise your hand and say, I can do something. I would like to participate and put yourself forward.
It's hard.
It's hard.
It's scary.
And I probably, early on in my career, marched myself into a boss's office too many times to say, I'd like to try this, or I want to do this, or give me a chance. And other times I might have been perhaps too shy.
All right, let me stop you there. All right, so you march yourself into the boss's office.
Right.
Because some people march into the boss's office to complain, period.
Right.
And it sounded to me that's exactly what you were doing. You were marching yourself in a boss's office.
To have the opportunity and ask for the opportunity based on, I'm really interested, here are my qualifications, this is what I can do, here are the goals, I think I can participate, this is what I have to offer.
And you were laying out an understanding of a problem that the boss was faced with.
Right. And a lot of times it happens when a company, a division, a group gets very busy. And when you're so busy there, instead of getting more people, you can raise your hand and say, you know what? I'd like to take this on and grow with the group.
So you're going after challenges.
Yeah.
It was. I once heard an executive of in all places with the government in D.C., but he talked about, he said, run to problems. Well, most people are running away from problems. Were you running to problems?
I don't think I would chase a lot of problems down, but I would certainly chase what I thought might be market opportunities, areas of growth. And again, I think it goes back to these two founders that I just interviewed, how they said they want to work the problems. And sometimes that can be some of the most interesting things that you do.
So, and satisfaction, personal satisfaction. But how do you get yourself to do that in the first place? Because you're scared, right? You were talking about being scared.
It's scary to take on something new. It's scary to maybe think you might not succeed. But maybe that goes back to Dale Carnegie and saying,
and stop worrying and start living.
Or what? No, his yes, and also what's the worst thing that can happen? Because that's the thing that he keeps saying in the book. What's the worst thing that can happen? So if you want to grow, if you want to have an interesting career in life, you have to be able to take on challenges, but they have to be probably the right challenges. You don't want to do something where it's so out of your depth that you know you're going to fail. But you certainly want to think about what's the right challenge at the right time in your life.
See, you know, there's some real classic wisdom in here, but I want to dig into it a little bit more. Because, all right, so you can imagine what's the worst thing that could happen, and then you go like, oh my God, that would be horrible, I just die. Or you just say, okay, that could happen. So you would imagine a worse.
I probably wouldn't say, oh, that would be horrible, that could happen. I'm probably go to the other side first before I pull myself out.
I'm still going to live, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to survive this. A friend of mine, Eric Barker, writes this great blog, Barking Up the Wrong Tree. And he was talking about how samurais lost their fear of death by thinking about it.
Wow.
They'd go into battle and they'd say, I could die. Okay. And they lost their fear of it by thinking about what's the worst thing that can happen. You're a samurai. Did you know you were a samurai?
I didn't know that till just this moment.
And interestingly enough, I worked the kidnapping in the Philippines, coached a brother. He saved his brother's life, who was kidnapped by a serial killer.
Oh, God.
And he was phenomenal, and he was eminently coachable. And afterwards, I said, how is it that you were this good? He said, well, I don't know if this had anything to do with it, but early on, I just realized my brother could get killed. And I think when I realized that, then I freed myself to accept the coaching you gave me, which is what's the worst thing that could happen.
And what was the coaching you gave him?
I coached him how to negotiate with a killer. We got his brother out. We got the upper hand on this guy. His brother was rescued.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, we had the killer on his heels. The kidnapper actually said to the course of the negotiations, because I always coached overseas, he literally said to himself, wow, nobody's ever dealt with me like this before. With that tone of voice, which that's not anger. That's a little bit of resignation. And it's a killer on the other side.
Hmm.
And the brother that I coached was a superstar. And I was always fascinated for years. And finally, I used to bring him into lecture at the business school classes I would teach because it was about mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was a high stakes negotiation.
What do you think the tipping point was in that negotiation where the man you were negotiating with started to just relax?
We got him early on.
Uh-huh.
We use a lot of what and how questions. Make the other side feel in charge.
How do you use what and how questions?
You say stuff like, how am I supposed to do that? What do you want me to do? Bad guy wanted a daily payment of ransom to keep the hostage alive.
Okay.
And through the course of the negotiation, I said, no, we can't do that. Because what he's going to do is he's going to drain you guys for months, if not years. And
right.
This is also his way to gauge how much money you have. If you're willing to put up the daily amount of money, you got a lot of dough.
Right.
So we got into a negotiation over the daily amount. And my guy on his own, because we were coaching him on what and how questions, he said to the kidnapper, when we run out of money for the ransom, for the daily amount, what's going to happen? And it was a long silence on the other end of the line. And the kidnapper said, it'll be all right. And when he said that in that moment, what he did was promise not to hurt the victim.
Yes.
So, but we asked a lot of, we were very deferential.
Right.
And my guy was brilliant. And I never knew why he was so brilliant till I talked about him afterwards. And he said, you know, to use your words, he thought about what's the worst that could happen. And he just recognized it could happen.
Right.
And with that, like, he was a samurai, you're a samurai.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be in that group.
You didn't know you were a samurai, did you?
This isn't about me.
You can't ask me questions.
I'm supposed to be giving you the third degree.
You can't give me the third degree. It's not fair. See what being charm will do? You completely turn the tables on somebody.
So that's part of the fun, right?
It is
fun. To circle back to the very beginning.
So what are the rules? What are your rules?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I really have any rules per se.
I bet you do. People, spectacular people like you, have got some operating rules. They just don't always understand they're there. I think you like life.
Absolutely. I agree with that. You know, I'm enjoying life. I've been on an incredible journey, and I think that's important to me. And again, embracing new things, learning new things that involves change because the world is changing so rapidly. So I want to stay current and involved like everyone else. Well, maybe not everyone feels that way.
Yeah, well, not everybody does. A lot of people are scared of change.
Right.
You're excited by it.
Yeah.
Optimistic about it. There's more better stuff coming. Well, change instead of, oh my God, what's going to happen next? It's, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Right?
Sometimes, yeah, absolutely.
It's an exciting adventure.
Absolutely. Other rules or things that are...
Learn. You want to learn.
I love to read. I love to learn. That's always been part of my life. I love history. Very much reading history, the news. I think a lot of us are real news
junkies. What do you like about history?
I think, you know, and I'm quoting someone else. Is it who said this? You know, history tends to repeat itself.
So you like, it's part of learning.
Yes. And, I think certain things go in cycles, so I'm always looking for the cycle in certain things.
Ah, right.
So.
Because you're trying to anticipate.
Right. Absolutely. So I'm looking for the cycles. I'm always trying to look a little bit ahead and see what may be happening so that I might be able to anticipate the change, and maybe it won't throw me as much because I do find change hard like everyone else sometimes.
Right.
So I try to say, I think this is coming or something's coming down the pike. Let me try and understand it and assimilate it into my psyche early. So when it actually comes, it's not going to be so hard.
you don't get caught off guard.
Right.
There's a certain amount of preparation.
I try. I don't think that, you know, obviously for some things that there's any amount of preparation.
Right.
For when change hits you or you don't know how something's going to occur.
You're self-effacing.
Yeah, I think so.
Some people might say humble, but I don't know that humble is exactly the right word. But you're not, you don't try to overtly be domineering.
No, I don't think that's my personality. And I'm just, again, I really want to work well with people and it's socially and in a business environment.
You're navigating the business world without being pushy.
Yes, I have an expression for that. I like to, and again, I'm plagiarizing someone else who gave it to me, and I don't remember who did it. It's called being, someone might call it being tactfully aggressive.
Ooh, interesting. Tactfully aggressive.
Yeah, I forget where I heard that expression.
That's brilliant. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
What's that about?
I think it's about things like using skills that are referenced in your book and in other parts of your life where you want to make sure that you're approaching things in a tactful manner. And sometimes you do need to push yourself forward or your agenda or whatever's going on. But it's the way that you do it that makes it successful or unsuccessful. So you really have to think about how you're being, all your tactics and how they're lined up. And sometimes you're successful doing that and other times you're not. And when you're not successful, and in my case, I often spend a lot of time reflecting on what did I do right or wrong so I can do a better job next time.
And in often cases, it sounds like to me, it's principally what did you do right or wrong in the delivery, not in the message.
Right. I think it's, yeah, again, it's sometimes it's delivery. Sometimes maybe you're not as articulate. Maybe you haven't delivered the message as well. And
do we run out of time? Was that the ding?
That wasn't mine. My phone's not on.
Something else in the room. The Russians. The Russians getting us again. Darn Russians. First they tried to interfere in the election. Now they're trying to interfere in a third degree. Tactfully aggressive.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love that expression. And I think it applies to so many people and other people that I admire. And that's why they do well. They might do well in a negotiation, why they might do well in a business meeting, why they might be a great leader, because they're looking at all the different tactics. And also, they're involved in the details, and they bring the details to the forefront to be able to accomplish something. And that's part of tactics and accomplishing what you want.
Be involved in the details and bring the details to the forefront. That's really interesting. It's kind of thinking things through in depth, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And is there an awareness that you can't think of everything?
I feel I can't think of everything, but I know other executives or other role models, back to that point, that I've seen and been with where I marvel at how well and how fluid they are at bringing details and their depth of knowledge and how they can access it at a moment's notice. And I think that's a wonderful skill and talent in life.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people have that, but the people that do, it's they're able to accomplish a lot with that kind of a gift. So, and it takes practice.
How many people are successful by being aggressive but not being tactful about it?
Well, I don't actually know. I don't know the statistics, but I think that probably sometimes when you're too aggressive, you don't necessarily accomplish the goals that you want.
Can you be successful without being aggressive?
I don't think you have to be aggressive. I think you have to lay out your plan and follow some of your plans to make sure you're hitting your goals. And then hopefully, you know, as you're following the plan, and there's always setbacks. And that's the thing. It's how you deal with those setbacks. Again, how you work the problem, which keeps propelling you forward. And I think a lot of people that are very successful, they're when they have a setback, they use that information to propel them forward. Something else happens. They use that. they take that knowledge and they spin it another way and they keep building that. And so they've slowly built this foundation of knowledge and skills over the course of their lifetime to become who they are and role models, great executives, great leaders.
All right. So here's what I think it sounds to me the rules are.
Okay.
Be tactfully aggressive. Work the problem. Be optimistic. Have fun. Stay true to who you are deep down in your core.
I think that's a great summary. And you probably did a better job of analyzing me than me analyzing me.
I'm just listening. You are wonderful.
Well, thank you.
The Forbes blog, again, where do we go to find it?
Women at Forbes under NJ Goldston. And there's my column on actionable business advice.
And how often does that come out?
Twice a month.
So twice a month, women and men could go to this.
Absolutely.
And get actionable advice, get some really good advice from someone who's living it, not just telling other people what they should do from the sidelines. You're not up in the stands watching this. You're living this advice.
I'm living it, but I'm also working hard to go out to all kinds of founders and entrepreneurs and executives and tap into what they know and bring that to an audience who's interested in hearing from a variety of executives.
So besides the Forbes blog, where can people go to learn stuff from you?
I have my blog, The Blonde and the Brunette.
The Blonde and the Brunette. Which one are you?
I am the brunette and the blonde's my alter ego.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And I also have a new column on there that I just started, which is called 99 Problems, But I Can Help You With One. So feel free to send questions into that.
And where do we find this?
On theblondeandthebrunette.com.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for being
this is wonderful.
On the Third Degree.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
This has been The Third Degree, hosted by me, Chris Voss. If you want to learn more about negotiation, there are two ways. Number one, if you like visual learning, go to the Black Swan Group's YouTube channel. Black Swan Group is my company that teaches and trains negotiation. Our YouTube channel will show you some great videos about getting better at negotiation and links to some other cool stuff like my Google Talk. Number two, if you like to learn by reading, buy Never Split the Difference on Amazon. It's a book on negotiation. It's done very well. You'd love it. Buy it on Amazon because they get the best price. You might also like subscribing to our negotiation newsletter, The Edge. The Edge comes out once a week, every Tuesday morning. It's short and sweet, and it's easy to read. The way you subscribe, because it's free, subscribe to The Edge by texting the word FBI empathy. Make that all one word. Don't let your spell check autocorrect it. Put a space between FBI and empathy. FBI empathy to 22828. Send FBI empathy to the number 22828. You get a dialog box back that'll subscribe you to The Edge. So until next time on A Third Degree, have a great and safe day.